All right, so diving in today, we're looking at a case, L.V. Babbitt, going back to 1971.
Okay.
But it's still, it really highlights some core stuff about partnership law that I think is really relevant even now.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
we're going to go like really in depth, not just like, here's what the case is about,
Right.
but like, what are the real world implications for, anyone, but especially like law students who are, trying to figure out how these like textbook principles actually play out. And like at the heart of it, we're talking about like who gets to make financial decisions in a partnership. You know, what's considered just like general business knowledge versus something that's like protectable, like a trade secret or something. And like, how do courts step in when, things go sour to try to make things fair?
Yeah, this case is, it's a really good example of kind of all these different legal areas bumping up against each other, you know,
Yeah.
partnership authority, the use of information, and then, like you said, the principles of restitution. And it's something that, you know, anyone in business, anyone thinking about partnerships should really, you know, be aware of. And this case is, it's a good way to see how these things play out.
Yeah. So for context, right, like the case itself, it goes back to 1954, and we've got this partnership, the Pipe Machinery Co.
Okay.
And it was between, three guys, L, Beale, and Babbitt. Now they weren't actually like manufacturing pipes themselves.
Right.
What they did was they financed these pipe mills.
Oh,
Yeah,
interesting.
and then they leased them out.
Okay.
And the main company they were leasing to was Beale Corporation, which was a family-owned business.
Got it.
So like pretty standard arrangement,
Right.
right? Beale Corporation uses the mills, they pay royalties to the partnership.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Simple enough on the surface.
Right, yeah. But of course, like as with so many things, it gets complicated.
Right.
So we jump ahead like a decade or so to the mid-60s, and this is where we start to see some cracks form. So a couple of things happen that really trigger the dispute, right? The first one is Beale and Babbitt, they're acting as managing partners,
Right.
and they decide on their own to cut the royalty payments in half.
Wow.
50% reduction. And they said they did this to help Beale Corporation because they were trying to finalize a big sale
Okay.
and, lower prices make it more attractive.
Yeah.
But the thing is, this ended up costing the partnership like 8 to 200 bucks.
Yeah, that's not insignificant.
Not small potatoes, right?
Yeah.
So, obviously L, the other partner, he's not too happy about that.
Right. I would imagine not.
But it wasn't just the royalty thing. It sounds like Beale Corporation was up to some other stuff that L had a problem with.
Okay, so more than just the money.
Yeah, so this is where it gets really interesting, I think. And
Yeah.
this is where like all these different legal issues start to, kind of come together.
Right.
So Beale Corporation, they allegedly start copying the design of the pipe mills that they're leasing, right? So like taking the knowledge of how these mills are built and using it for themselves. On top of that, they supposedly held back on some of the royalty payments.
Oh, wow.
Like
Yeah.
even beyond the reduction. And then to make matters worse, after the lease is over, they kept this cutoff saw
Okay.
that belonged to the partnership. So now you've got like this whole mess. You've
Right.
got this unilateral financial decision. You've got this question about like using the mill design. You've got unpaid royalties and you've got like partnership property that's just gone.
Yeah, a whole bunch of potential breaches.
Right. So the court, they have to figure out like what's going on here legally.
Yeah.
And the first big question is, did Beale and Babbitt, as managing partners, did they have the right to just slash those royalties without L saying, yeah, okay, I'm good with that?
Right.
Like, that's a big deal, right?
It is. And it really gets to the core of how partnerships are supposed to be run.
Exactly. So we got to look at the UPA.
The Uniform Partnership
Yeah.
Act. Okay.
To like understand the rules of the game, right?
Okay.
So Section 18A of the UPA. It says that all partners have equal rights when it comes to managing the partnership's business.
Okay.
So, like, the starting point is everyone has a say, right?
Right.
And then you've got Section 18H, which adds that anything that goes against the partnership agreement needs everyone to agree.
Got it.
So the court had to figure out, did this royalty cut violate the partnership agreement? Like, was it something that either directly or indirectly went against what they'd agreed to?
Right.
And was it such a big decision that it basically changed the nature of their business, meaning everyone had to be on board?
Makes sense.
But the court didn't just look at like the strict rules.
No.
They also looked at how the partners had actually been doing things.
Interesting. So, like, the reality of the situation.
And this is, I think, really important for, anyone dealing with the law to understand. Like, it's not just about what's written down, it's about how things are actually done.
Right.
So what they noticed was, for years, Beal and Babbitt had basically been acting like the managing partners, making day-to-day decisions without Elle needing to sign off on every little thing.
Okay.
And the court actually said, the fact that the business is conducted in a certain manner for years is evidence of acquiescence.
So basically, L was okay with this arrangement because he didn't object for so long.
Right, exactly. It's like by not saying anything, he was basically saying, yeah, this is how we do things.
That's a good point. So the court saw that as a kind of implied agreement about how they were managing the partnership.
Yeah, exactly. But then they also said, hold on, this 50% cut, that might be a bit too much. Like, that might not just be ordinary business that managing partners can decide on their own.
Right.
So it makes you think, right, like, where's the line? Small operational stuff, probably fine. But a huge financial change, that's a different story. So for, anyone listening who might be in a partnership or thinking about forming one, what's the takeaway here?
I think the big lesson is be really, really clear in your partnership agreement. Like, spell out exactly who has the authority to do what. Don't leave anything vague or open to interpretation. Say exactly what counts as a routine decision and what needs everyone to agree. Talk about things like big financial moves, changing the core business, selling off major assets. The more detail you have up front, the less likely you are to end up in court arguing about what everyone meant.
So true.
Okay.
Okay, so that's the authority question. Now, let's move on to the second big issue, right? Beal Corporation using the pipe mill design.
Okay.
I mean, the partnership paid for those mills. You'd think they'd have some ownership over the design, right?
Okay.
But the court said, nope, so why not?
This is where the whole concept of a trade secret comes in. The court said that the mill design wasn't a trade secret because Beal Corporation, they learned about it through the lease agreement. They had the right to use the mills, to inspect them, to repair them. So naturally, they'd see how they were designed and how they worked. It wasn't like this secret information that was locked away.
Right.
And you also have to consider what the partnership was all about. Their main goal wasn't to come up with some amazing new pipe mill design and then sell it to everyone. They were focused on financing these specific mills for Beal Corporation to use. So the idea that the design was the super secret thing that no one else could know about, it just didn't really fit.
So basically, the context matters, right?
Yeah.
Like, what's the purpose of the partnership?
Exactly. If the partnership had been in the business of designing and selling these super advanced pipe mills, then copying the design would have been a much bigger deal.
Okay, so no trade secret violation there. But what about the unpaid royalties and that saw they kept? That brings us to our third big legal topic, restitution. Like, how do courts decide what's fair when someone has benefited unfairly or kept something that wasn't theirs?
Right. So this is all about unjust enrichment. The court was very clear about how to calculate damages in these situations. For things like the unpaid royalties and the saw, it's pretty straightforward. Beal Corporation has to pay what they owe.
Makes sense.
It's about making the partnership whole, right?
Right. But what about those situations where Beal Corporation might have actually done something that benefited the partnership?
Oh, yeah. You're talking about, like, the example in the case where they prepped the mills for storage after the lease was over.
Yeah, exactly. So how does restitution work then?
The court said that the amount of restitution should be based on how much the recipient actually benefited, not just how much it cost the other party.
Okay.
There is this really important line in the decision. The measure of restitution is the value of the benefit to the recipient. So let's say Beal Corporation spent like 15 grand getting those mills ready for storage.
Okay.
But that prep work only increased the mill's value by 10 grand.
Right.
Then they'd probably only have to pay back 10 grand. It's not about punishing them or making sure they get all their money back. It's about making sure the partnership didn't get a freebie.
Interesting. So it's not just about making things even, it's about making sure one side doesn't get an unfair advantage.
Exactly.
Now, it's worth noting that the trial court originally said the partnership should get damages for the design copying too,
Right.
but that got reversed on appeal.
Yeah.
But the damages for the royalties and the saw, those stayed. What
Well,
does that tell us?
it shows that the court was being really careful about what they considered unfair. Beal Corporation still had to fulfill their end of the bargain, pay what they owed, and return the partnership's property.
Right.
But the design copying, that was a different story, because in the context of this specific partnership, it wasn't seen as stealing some secret information.
Okay. So for our listeners, especially those future lawyers out there, what are the big takeaways from this L.V. Babbitt case?
I'd say, first and foremost, partnership agreements matter. A lot. Be super clear about who's in charge, what decisions they can make, and what counts as ordinary business.
Yeah.
The more you put in writing up front, the less you'll have to fight about later.
Totally agree.
Second, think about the information your business has. What's a trade secret that needs to be protected? What's just general knowledge?
Okay.
And third, when you're dealing with restitution, remember it's about the benefit to the recipient, not just the cost to the other side.
And we also saw how important it is to speak up, right? Like, if you're in a partnership and you don't agree with how things are being run, don't just stay quiet.
Right.
Because legally, staying quiet can mean you're agreeing to things.
Absolutely. L.V. Babbitt is a perfect example of how in partnerships, what you do matters as much as what's written down.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, it leaves us with a really interesting question to think about. You know, technology is changing everything so fast. It's easier than ever to copy designs, share information, reverse engineer things.
Right.
So how is that going to affect the whole idea of general knowledge versus trade secrets?
Yeah.
And what can partnerships do to protect their intellectual property in this crazy, fast-paced world?
That's a huge question. And cases like this one, they give us the foundation for understanding these new challenges.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us for this deep dive into L.V. Babbitt. We'll get to you next time.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.